You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
It's 6:28. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Moyaha. And at the start of the show, I mentioned that the team at Microsoft in 1997 had acquired they had bought $150 million worth of Apple shares that they then sold for $550 million in 2003. Interestingly enough, if they'd held on to that stake and held on through all of the stock splits that we saw come through from Apple, there was a stock split in 2005, there was one in 2014, and there was one in 2020. If they'd held on through all of that, and the current share price on Apple is around $208.44, that stake that investment of $150 million would be worth around $211 billion in today's valuation. So certainly some interesting lessons learned there. I don't think Bill Gates is too upset about having lost a bit of money on that deal. I'm sure he's still quite comfortable. And I'm sure the Microsoft team are quite comfortable in that respect as well. But we move on. We move on to the case of investments, and we are looking at the investment case that exists for the African continent. It's a very interesting investment case, and there's something that's come out from the team at RMB. They've come out with a very lengthy report around where to invest in Africa in 2024. And I'm joined on the line by Africa strategist at Rand Merchant Bank, Samantha Singh Jami, to take a look at this and try and unpack what the report says. Good evening, Sam. Lovely to speak to you again. Why Africa? Why now?
Thanks, Jimmy. I think looking at the continent, I mean, RMB has been entrenched in various aspects and investing in the continent. This is a report that started, the way to invest in Africa at least, started in 2011. We took a little bit of a break post-COVID, and we've relaunched it now. And I think the investment case is clear to be made. I mean, you know, Africa is not a country. It's complex. It's diverse. Arguably, 54 countries, and they differ in economic performance, potential, market accessibility, and innovation as well. So, I think we try to unpack a lot of that. There's a lot of granular detail. I think you mentioned the report is quite lengthy. So, yes, 159 pages, a lot of granular detail. But we try to simplify it in some of the earlier pages of the report as well.
Sam, we'll get into some of the specifics around the countries in a second. I want to start with just an overview around where we sit on the African Continental Free Trade Area, as well as obviously the developments around AGOA that's happening with the US. How do these two kinds of policies or directives influence how investment is being seen on the continent?
I think in terms of maybe just looking at the trade relationships generally, when you look at intra-African trade, it only makes up about 15%, so 1/5, whereas in other jurisdictions or other regions, it's much higher. So I think there's a lot of work there. You know, the trade relationships have shifted to some extent. We've had, you know, your traditional players, the US, UK, and Europe, and we've seen some dynamic shifts towards the East. This is not only in terms of trade relationships, but also in terms of investment relationships. So I think, you know, there's one of the pillars that we talk about called interconnectedness, and I think this describes a lot of the relationships and the international presence of some of these markets as well.
Sam, when we look at some of the other opportunities, I mean, the report outlines obviously that there are some obstacles towards some of the investment cases or towards strong investment cases, but also that there are opportunities within these particular obstacles. And I think about things like infrastructure development, where on one end it is a big, big negative to not have infrastructure, but at the same time, from an investment case, you can then go out into other markets and say, we want investment for infrastructure. So it becomes a good thing to kind of have an obstacle.
Yeah, so I think the infrastructure deficit has been emphasized quite a bit of late, and we know that there's more than $100 billion of infrastructure development probably needed on the continent. And here, I think, yeah, as you said, lies the opportunity as well. So it can become a bit of an investment case for some. There's been innovative ways to raise funds for some of these investments. So countries have gone through looking at, you know, Eurobonds and raising them on the international market. But then you've also got the case where, you know, looking at ESG financing and, you know, blue bonds and things like that, that can also help bridge the infrastructure gap being used more and more of late.
Now, some listeners might not know this, but Sam and I actually sat on a panel about 2022-2023-ish around the investment case for Africa, and a lot of the popularity was still around the commodity space. I think of countries like Ghana and Zambia and obviously the copper story that's been playing out in South Africa and on the continent. How are markets still seeing the commodity space on the continent at the moment?
So I think that's still a very strong theme playing across. When you look at actual FDI numbers coming into the continent, obviously you've got countries like Mozambique that stand out, and others that are looking at oil and gas either at exploration phases or at development phases, and you see strong FDI coming through there. So I mentioned Mozambique, but the likes of Senegal, where you've had oil and gas projects, Cote d'Ivoire as well, and looking at Uganda and some of the other countries that have found oil. But I think on the other hand, just outside the commodities story, I mean, some of the trends that we've seen is that in 2023, you know, what we saw was a highlight of some of the investment coming through was in the renewable energy space. So you had about $10 billion coming through for solar and wind projects, and that was largely across three countries. So your South Africa, Egypt, and Zimbabwe as well. So I'd say commodities is still a very strong theme across and investment in that space, but there's been some shifts of late.
Sam, let's look at South Africa. Let's zoom in on where South Africa stands, where we rank on this continental ranking of sorts. We make top five, but we're not first. We're not even in the top three.
Yeah, so I think the dynamics at play are interesting. We went, you know, from our initial documents using just about six indicators to making this document a little bit more robust in terms of the model itself. And so we're looking at something across 20 indicators. So I think where South Africa does fairly well, and I think it's no surprise, are on things like market accessibility and innovation. There's something like economic stability and the investment climate, which also talks about forex stability and liquidity. Unfortunately, I think for the case of South Africa, when you look at our last pillar, which is the social and human development, South Africa obviously doesn't rank high. In fact, out of the 31 countries we look at, when you think about income inequality and unemployment, the country ranks 31 out of these 31 countries. So I think that's the, you know, that's the factors that have brought the rating down. A lot of South Africans would say we should be in first place. But I think, yeah, we do have a lot of work to do in that space, social and development.
Sam, when we look at some of the rankings, can you just take us through some of the metrics in brief? I mean, I think there's a misconception that the rankings were just an arbitrary number, but there was clear considerations around everything from GDP to corruption to political stability. Can you just take us through how the entire ranking system was kind of put together?
Yeah, so I mentioned that we moved from something which used about six metrics to something that uses 20. And I think that what stands out is the economic performance and potential. I think when you're looking at investing in a country, just the general health of the economy and some of the prospects are always going to be important. So I'd say that plays a big role, and that weighs about 35% in the overall ranking. There are aspects of market accessibility and innovation that we take into consideration. And I think some of the smaller economies here, especially those surrounding South Africa that are reliant on South Africa for the bulk of the imports, you'd find that they would probably rank low there. And then you have things like economic complexity as well. So just to understand, you know, all the goods and services that are produced in an economy. Granted, there's a lot of work on the continent to get that maybe up to speed for some of the markets that you've mentioned are commodity reliant. But I think there's been a lot of work and reform to make those changes. And then I think the two other ones that we looked at is economic stability and investment climate. One of the key pillars as part of this is the forex stability and liquidity. So, you know, once you invest in a country, of course, you want to be able to repatriate profits or, you know, exit if need be. And then lastly is the social and human development. So I think this plays an important role in all types of investments. And when we think about countries also looking at innovative ways to raise financing, I think this plays an even bigger role. So, you know, when you look at things like social impact bonds and development impact as well. So I think we've gone through the four pillars and some intricacies and granularities on most of these.
Certainly a very detailed report, and I mean, we did discuss this at the beginning. It's 160 odd pages there of data that is put together. Sam, before I let you go, I want to look at the sustainability aspect of it. You touched on the saying that renewables were about $10 billion in investments in 2023, and South Africa was a kind of a primary or one of the top three from that perspective. From a sustainability perspective, is it something that investors are looking at? Is it still front of mind to investors around things like energy transition or just sustainable business practices when they make those investments?
Yeah, so I think, we've seen the whole big pillar on the ESG, from a bond market perspective, obviously, gaining significant growth in years. So both from an investor point of view, when looking to invest, I think just having some of those elements do make it a little bit easier to invest. And we've had not only, countries look at issuing things like green bonds, but we've had the African Development Bank also being a pivotal player in this market. So I think, that's gained traction, and we're probably going to see a lot more of those type of investments coming through. We had a call not so long ago with Ivory Coast, and they were busy looking at a sustainable development framework. And so you get institutions like the World Bank that's also helping countries develop some of these.
There's still an attractive case for the African continent. There's still an attractive case for South Africa, and investors are definitely looking. I think we'll leave it at that, Sam. Thanks so much for those insights. Samantha Singh Jami, Africa strategist at Rand Merchant Bank, joining me to reflect on their Where to Invest in Africa 2024 report.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.